been crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go to warm Haiti? Why can't we live in bliss? Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a beast train. Oh, beast train, take this country, come take me home again. Oh, beast train sounding louder.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is David Courtright, who is an American scholar and peace activist. He is Director of Policy Studies at the Kroc Institute for International Peace Studies at the University of Notre Dame, and previously was the Executive Director of the Committee for a Sane Nuclear Policy, which under his direction became the largest disarmament organization in the U.S., later merging with the Nuclear Weapons Freeze Campaign. And in 2002, he helped to found the Win Without War Coalition in opposition to the U.S. invasion of Iraq. His most recent books are Ending Obama's War, Responsible Military Withdrawal from Afghanistan, and Towards Nuclear Zero. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Courtright.
Yes, hello again. How are you?
Well, I'm well, and unfortunately, David, in the next couple of days, I think, with this drumbeat of war, I suppose there's no way that the president is going to start bombing Syria while he's celebrating Martin Luther King's I Had a Dream speech on Wednesday. But perhaps as early as Thursday, there's a certain inevitability about this military punitive strike against Syria. Do you feel that in this rush for war, with this drumbeat for war, which we're all too familiar with, that the other alternatives are simply Not only are they being drowned out, they're not even being approached or floated?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the president has boxed himself in with this foolish statement that he made previously about red lines and Syria and the use of chemical weapons. And, of course, here we have a massive use of these weapons, a heinous attack against people that has apparently left many hundreds dead and thousands seriously harmed. So it's almost impossible for the president not to act, unfortunately, because of the nature of the act and of the policies the president has put in place and the threat that he made, this hollow threat, but now he's forced to try to implement it. But the main point here is that so we can bomb and send missile attacks into Syria, and then what? And what would be accomplished? And meanwhile, the other options that might be available are not even being considered. I've argued for quite a long time, and colleagues here have as well, that if there is evidence of this kind of chemical attack, which appears to be the case now, well, then this should be brought immediately to the UN Security Council and to the International Criminal Court. We have these institutions that have been created for this purpose. If we can identify those responsible, they should be brought before the international court and indicted as war criminals. And then we can begin to consider actions against them, certainly bringing them before a legal tribunal. And if ultimately it is a decision that military force could be used, it should only be with multilateral endorsement through the UN Security Council, or if the Russians continue to balk within the Security Council, perhaps within the UN General Assembly. But there are other avenues for taking action when we're faced with this kind of potential criminal act. But first of all, we need to bring it to the Security Council, to the International Criminal Court. Let's look at the evidence, make sure that we're certain who actually ordered these attacks. Was it rogue military commanders, or was it ordered from the top by Assad and the government? Who is really responsible? We really don't have that evidence yet. Appearances are one thing, but firm evidence is necessary before we would take such drastic action as to launch military strikes.
But David Courtright, the first thing that comes to mind, of course, is how paralyzed the United Nations Security Council is, that Russia and China have blocked all efforts to put pressure on Assad to stop killing his own people.
Well, but Russia did agree to the UN inspection team that would go into Iraq and try to get evidence on the ground and through interviews as to what actually happened and who is responsible. And I think even now they seem to be supportive of the UN inspection visiting. Now, it's true that the inspectors will not be able to get physical evidence, you know, forensic evidence that could be used in court, but they are interviewing Syrian victims and interviewing people in the neighborhoods, and through that process hopefully can gather enough evidence, and that then should be brought to the Security Council. Certainly the Russians would be willing to go that far, and these steps are necessary in any case. So I think it's likely, you're right, that, that Russia would balk at any kind of military action against Syria, but maybe that's the wisest decision anyway, because we understand the impulse. You want to take action and punish those responsible for this crime, but the point of law is to prevent future crimes. It's also to establish legal accountability and responsibility for the person who ordered these actions, and that process will take time. And if we launch military strikes, as it seems likely now, then we've basically foreclosed those options. And the consequences, I'm afraid, of the U.S. and other countries perhaps joining in, becoming involved in military action here, will be to escalate what's already a savage war, and perhaps will lead to even further violence in the region. A very little likelihood that the kind of military action that's being talked about would be able to prevent future atrocities like this, nor would it likely have much impact on the Assad regime, which is fighting for its life against armed rebels there in Syria. So what's the point of the military action? It's just sort of revenge, and also it's necessary to somehow hold up Obama's credibility, I suppose. But that's not a legitimate reason for using military force, and there's no basis for it, of course, in international law.
Again, I'm speaking with David Courtright, who's an American scholar and peace activist. He's the director of policy studies at the Kroc Institute for International Peace Studies at the University of Notre Dame. And previously, he was executive director of the Committee for a Sane Nuclear Policy, which under his direction became the largest disarmament organization in the U.S., later merging with the Nuclear Weapons Freeze Campaign. And in 2002, he helped to found the Win Without War Coalition in opposition to the U.S. invasion of Iraq. His most recent books are Ending Obama's War, Responsible Military Withdrawal from Afghanistan, and Towards Nuclear Zero. So given that we're in the environment of the drumbeat of war drowning out other suggestions and alternatives that are fairly hard to find, but is there a possibility that the threat of war could in itself be used as leverage to find a way to get to peace? In other words, not to pull the trigger, but to use this moment to make some kind of deal, to get the Russians and the Americans back on the same page. Because at the end of the day, the two fundamental things that Russia and America have in common is that neither wants Syria to end up in the hands of Al-Qaeda.
That's right. And this is the other option that's not being pursued as a result of possible military action, and that is diplomacy. And this very much pertains to Russia's role. Now, it's true they've been blocking a lot of action in the Security Council, but they have been willing to cooperate with Secretary of State Kerry in the idea of having a peace conference in which all the parties would come to the table and try to work out some sort of negotiated solution. Obviously, that's not made any progress, and I was very disappointed to see that Secretary Kerry has canceled meetings that were planned with some of the assistant secretaries of state with Russian officials in Europe this week. Those meetings should go ahead. And it could be, I think you're right, that the threat of military action is certainly something that the Assad regime is hoping to avoid. This is a grave threat to them. They are already seriously threatened by the scale of the rebellion against them. So perhaps this might convince them to come to the table. And conversely, in terms of the rebels, they are happy to see the U.S. and other countries intervening and taking military action against Assad. And perhaps they could be convinced on that basis to come to the table. So there might be an option here. It's difficult, but it seems to me it's an option that should be pursued. And this would argue then for the president, I presume he'll make a statement about this shortly, He might say that we're threatening this action, but we're still willing to hold out the option of diplomacy, and then instruct Secretary of State Kerry to really try to do a shuttle diplomacy effort among the Russians and the Syrians and the armed rebels in Syria, and see if some kind of a negotiation could be initiated. Obviously, it'd be difficult, but I think that's another option that should be pursued. It's clear that both sides are in a stalemate here, that neither has been able to defeat the other. It's a grueling, savage battle. The levels of destruction, the killing is appallingly high. And so it may be that it's reaching the point where both sides might welcome some kind of an arrangement. Division of the country probably is going to be inevitable given the way the battles have gone. So maybe this could be some kind of a negotiated option. It seems to me that would be preferable to just plowing ahead with a major military onslaught, because that, I think, then would jeopardize the option for diplomacy. I could imagine that the Russians are going to react very negatively to this, and Kerry would probably lose the option of their cooperation in hosting a peace conference. And I think having the Russians on board will be crucial in order to get Assad, or parts of his government at least, to come to the table.
And David Cotright, you mentioned a little while ago President Obama's credibility being involved, and of course he's the one who drew the red line, which apparently the Syrian government, the Assad regime, or elements in it, have crossed. And as somebody that's spent decades working in nuclear disarmament, one of the things, of course, that was always on everybody's mind during the Cold War was crossing the nuclear threshold. And the fact that there's a threshold is really a sort of a line in the sand as well in terms of civilization. So how do you feel about the idea that another line in terms of weapons of mass destruction apparently has been crossed?
Well, certainly we want to prevent any country from developing and using any form of weapons of mass destruction. But the idea that there would be a red line declared unilaterally by one government and that this would then be a basis for using military action, there's no basis in international law for that. And in fact, it's contrary to what we know to be effective in preventing states from proliferating nuclear or chemical weapons. There have been successes over the decades in persuading some states to give up the bomb or to get rid of their chemical weapons and other weapons of mass destruction. And if you look at what happened in those cases, in almost all of them, it was through diplomacy. There has to be a negotiated solution. Usually political deals are cut, security assurances are provided, trade benefits and economic normalization, all sorts of diplomatic tools are brought to bear to persuade countries to give up the bomb or to dismantle chemical weapons. So, we need to be vigilant and supportive of initiatives that are aimed to prevent proliferation. But the use of military force is not the way to do it, and there's no legal basis for it, and there's no evidence that it really is successful. I mean, the one example where military force was used to disarm a country was in Iraq, first in 1990 and 91, and then in 2003 and afterwards. And in fact, the military force was not the factor that led to the disarmament of Iraq in 1991. It was the UN inspections on the ground. So in any case, the point is that in almost every other instance where we've had success in preventing or rolling back proliferation, it's been through diplomacy, not through unilateral military force.
So, David Cotright, is there anybody that you can see out there in our politics and in our media that's having this conversation or making these points? Is there anybody weighing in on the president? I get the feeling that everybody, you know, starting with the French foreign minister, then the British foreign minister, and then their leaders as well, and now Kerry, everybody's saying, you know, bomb, bomb, bomb. I'm just wondering, is there any voices out there that can be built on?
Well, I have not seen it within the administration, unfortunately. There are some members of the Congress who are demanding that at least there should be a debate. which I certainly would agree with. Before the president acts, Congress needs to have a say in this. But I suspect, unfortunately, that 90% or more of the members of Congress would probably be in favor of military strikes. There are a few voices like Barbara Lee and others, other congressmen and congresswomen who have been raising some questions, but there are very few who are willing to argue for opposing military force or trying to suggest strategies for how these other options, such as the UN and the International Criminal Court or a new diplomatic push, these kinds of alternative options are really not being discussed in Washington, as far as I can tell.
And all this in the context of a recent poll that says only 9% of the American people support a war against Syria. So there's the disconnect. And I thank you so much for joining us, David Cortright.
Okay. Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with David Cortright, who's an American scholar and peace activist. He's a director of policy studies at the Kroc Institute for International Peace Studies at the University of Notre Dame, and previously was the executive director of the Committee for a Sane Nuclear Policy, which under his direction became the largest disarmament organization in the U.S., later merging with the Nuclear Weapons Freeze Campaign. In 2002, he helped to found the Win Without War Coalition in opposition to the U.S. invasion of Iraq. His most recent books are Ending Obama's War, Responsible Military Withdrawal from Afghanistan, and Towards Nuclear Zero. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.